geluba naqdoog liyo nugal wa ku darara melay nabadi joogta.
Welcome to Issaka. My name's Amina Isid, and join me as I take you on a journey to explore identity, culture, and belonging. Take a seat as I take you through time, space, and various perspectives of cultural identity. Stay tuned to see where the journey will take us today.
Welcome back to another Isirka episode. This won't be like a full-blown episode. I just kind of wanted to come on and talk about today's November 15th. I just wanted to come on here real quick. This is an Instagram, but I'm acting like it's Instagram. But I just wanted to talk about the past couple of weeks for Somali arts and culture and music particularly. So first of all, last night, Sultan Sarar shut down London. First time, like a Somali artist has performed at a mainstream venue, did like a full-blown concert. And I mean, they even had pyrotechs. That was amazing to see. I think now we're 30 years after, the disintegration of the state, we've kind of settled into the diaspora. And for the next generation coming up, to see a Somali artist in a like live concert venue, like of that magnitude, not some little hall where it's only like the elders enjoying themselves, but like, you know, the same way you'd kind of see any other kind of Western artist on stage, you see a Somali artist doing a full-blown concert in Somali. Like, that's gonna have a crazy ripple effect. And even in terms of identity and kind of how you understand it and relate to it, relate to Somali music. And I think Sultan Sarar honestly has kind of broken the mold, as he's not just an artist that people listen to if you are like a hardcore Somali music lover. Like, he's kind of gotten to like the people that might not want to listen to Somali music or don't really go out of their way to listen to Somali music, but they've heard of a Sultan Sarar song. It's a bit catchy. He got lots of bangers, lots of songs for you to choose from. And so that was really cool to see. I'm glad that we were also able to see somebody who is very well established back home also make it in the diaspora. He did a European tour last year, but nothing is like London. I say this all the time, but London is my favorite Somali city. Everything dalka, you know, kheli kartit, London bad kheli karta. Dadka siday isku like xidhanihiin in London. What I really love about London is that Somalis have been in the UK for centuries, right? Like, you know, there's a historical kind of timeline. Seamen used to go there in the early 1900s. So there were frequent migrations back and forth. But if you're in London half the time, it's like you're in Somaliland. There's no difference. Other than at least like Somaliland, I read Badhali Kirta. In London, you don't have that option. But the way people organize and come together, when I was in London, I was like, oh my God, every single day, every other week, there's something going on, you know, like the uni kids, like the Somali societies, were also doing a lot better about getting organized and coming together. The elders are doing things. There's all these community groups. And the thing I love about London is that everybody comes together around being Somali. It's not a, like, you need to play by this specific cultural standard, you know, like, hijabis, non-hijabis, old, young. The Sultan Sinan concert, multi-generational. And that is always, like, even when BK came, BK was, like, I just, everywhere I looked, there was a sea of Somali people. And then there was young guys, not too many old guys, young women, middle-aged women, everybody's losing their minds. Like, and so Sultan Sinan was very similar, like, to that. So, I mean, even if there is nothing else that comes up after that, I've seen Americans on Twitter saying, what, we're gonna be next? But we'll see. I would want to see what that looks like, but I just feel like nobody, like, all London has the numbers, they have, like, the connections. Like, I just feel like nobody can do it like London. But anyways, so that was amazing. I was, like, really, like, enjoying the clips that I've seen out of that. I'm looking forward to the videos that come out of that. Even, like, when he did Somali Week, that was also really nice to see at Somali Week. They really did very, like, gotta give it to the organizing team. The finale concert was really dope to see, just like kind of like the different acts that were brought together under the same stage. Usually there's one big headliner and a couple of other acts that we normally see around London, but there was a bunch of different people and it was really nice. I mean, there was Sultan Sinan and La Fola and Hodan Umar Dule and Noor Dalai, like, and then Faisal Salah was just nominated for a Grammy. So talk about range, you know. And the Djiboutian dancers, it very, very well done. I really enjoyed watching that too. I wasn't there, but I saw clips online as well. And so London, my favorite Somali city, gets a major check. Like, you know, they did that these past couple of weeks. And then in Mogadishu, The Gravedigger's Wife, we kind of talked about the Toronto premiere, the Cannes premiere. They also premiered in London. But then now, The Gravedigger's Wife premiered at the National Theatre in Mogadishu. So a couple months ago, the first film was screened at the National Theatre in Mogadishu. I think the director was Somali, but The Gravedigger's Wife made it to Mogadishu before it made it to America, like main, like wide distribution all across the United States. That I think is fantastic. I think it's also going to be so amazing that this Somali film directed by Somalis in Somali, that's also like, I mean, it's winning award after award after award. Every like time you look up, it's getting a new award. And the fact that it's screening back home in the country, I think, is also fantastic. The National Theatre is doing its thing. And I hope we can kind of continue to see Somali arts and creativity really honed in at home and celebrated at home. The fact that the accessibility is there, that Dadka Dalka Choga aren't cut off in this, from what's kind of happening outside, is also great, like, because Somalis then can kind of find have some way to have some connection in that way of the district or of the cultural production. So I'm waiting, will we gonna be able to see it here in America? But I'm glad, like, that was really cool to see that it premiered in Mogadishu at the National Theatre. And as of right now, I think it's still kind of, it's still playing. I also wonder how people are gonna respond to it. Like, when they had, like, did these little videos showing you what the theatre looks like on the inside. And I just remembered when my mom was talking about, like, how when she was young and she went to the theater, about how huge the curtains were and how everything was so big and grandiose. And that's still something that, like, really surprised me when I was in Mogadishu, just seeing how big the National Theater was like, really kind of commands your attention. But it's good that like that physical institution is still thriving. Probably back in the days, there would have been riots that were produced with very minimal like special effects and green screen. It would have been people really kind of interpreting like different scenery, while they're acting. But this, you know, we're able to see like kind of other parts of the world and not on your laptop screen. And I just can't, like, I'm pretty sure, I don't know what the psyche would be like for somebody in Mogadishu who's watching this film, but, you know, I mean, they live in a country where everyone speaks Somali and things like that, but to be able to see kind of probably a very different side, like the way Hawtho and them talked about the representation in the film, and how people were related to, and how, you know, the main characters related to each other in such a loving way. Like, I just wonder what people's reaction was back home in terms of that. And then also, so I started this off with Sahar Ahmed, because I think when people think of Somali music, it's always usually that, like all those like old school songs that your mom used to play when you were younger growing up. And it's always like the same auto-tune-y kind of beat. And then a woman's alaling about something. But in 2021, Somali music not only gave us a full-blown huge concert in a venue in London, and it wasn't a small little venue, like pretty decent size venue. We also now have Nim'o Happy, who has completely gone viral. She's now signed to a record label. And I really want to talk about Nim'o Happy in that music video. I think she was in Beidabo singing that song a couple years ago. And I'm pretty sure it looks like it was for like a political event. And then whatever political appointees or like dignitaries are kind of sitting in the front, these big couches, and she's singing this love song in four different languages. She does English, she does Swahili, she does Arabic and Somali, effortlessly flowing between each language. And I really think this song became popular because of the fact that it was in multiple languages. So at least, like, you know, people could understand it in some way. And I love that. But I love the fact that Somali is also being spoken alongside other languages. While Somali people do probably speak, like, you know, either all those languages or at least a few of those languages, just by nature of the different spaces that we're involved in and things like that. The fact that it's all put in one song, the outside world finally has some accessibility to us. We've always been kind of clued into the world in some ways as Somali people, like either with migration, with religion. We know, you know, Somalis speak Arabic, Somalis speak English, they speak Somali. Some people probably speak Swahili if they live in Kenya or live closer to, or if they live in other parts of East Africa. You know, there's Somalis in Uganda and Tanzania for generations. So I think that was so cool to kind of tie that all in together. But and the beat is a little bit different. She's speaking multiple languages, and the whole world has just kind of caught on. And it's like, why this song and why now, like years later? But it doesn't really matter. TikTok is a beast of its own. But I would like to say that I think that goes to show kind of when it comes to cultural diplomacy as well, the ways in which that something like that, what this song is doing for Somalis is also kind of, everybody's like, oh, hey, you know, this country that we've normally just associated with pirates and civil war, or we don't even really know much about in a nuanced way outside of the pirate story, right? We've kind of been stuck as Somalis in one story. Either it's the pirates or it's a civil war or state collapse, all of these things. And now it's like, oh, this is a Somali song. And now everyone's like, Somalia. And now people are writing about it in like music journals, or people are kind of talking about it. They're really just talking about the hype of it. But then the fact that it kind of spiraled out that Nim'o Happy was then able to get a record deal so that she can then find, you know, A, maybe give us another song, but also financially benefit off of this song kind of doing numbers, is because she then was connected to a Somali girl does A&R in England, and then she kind of was a part of getting her record deal. And I just feel like, look at the power of the diaspora, look at the power of people that are willing to, I think, not stay silent and not stay hidden. You know, we really are kind of like involved in a lot of different spaces. We're taking up space and we're making sure kind of things are done well, and done well in a lot of ways. So even the Soldan Serrat concert, that probably was done by a team of people that have been spending decades, you know, kind of performing or going to Western concerts. And I love the fact that we have kind of stepped out of the box in terms of what is acceptable for us and what we've always done. And now we're really kind of taking up space on a, like, a world sphere. And we need a lot of, and we need to kind of like continue. We need all these spaces to just kind of exist and do things, and also kind of add on to the narrative of what it means to be Somali, or add on to the narrative or the representation of Somalis, because then we can give the world an image of us that we would like to share, as opposed to the world capturing images and stories of us that we don't always want to give out. But ultimately, I think that's where dignity comes in, right? Like, if you define yourself for yourself and kind of share your story in a way that you would like to. But there's one other thing that I would like to say about, a couple other things I'd like to say about this Never a Happy song. So first of all, she's in Baidaba. She's singing to politicians. And then there's bodyguards, like askaris, like officers around her, men and women, and they are jamming. First of all, like, you know, usually you see women at parties, like arroces and stuff like that, and they're dancing, having a good time. These women in uniform are also enjoying themselves, and she's enjoying herself, and the politicians are enjoying themselves, and they all dance with her too. So maybe it's just the song is a little bit different. But I have never seen something like that, where you've seen Somalis all unapologetically enjoying themselves. Like, you know, usually, like, I don't know if you, when Farhan Yare sang for Somaliland this year, Musa Bihi, like, he's singing along, but then he's trying to still have this stone cold face, but then you just see, like, one eyebrow goes up, and then, like, you could tell the song kind of affected him, but he still wants to be, like, had this cool demeanor type of thing. But I think that was really, like, and I wonder did they just feel comfortable enough? Like, weren't they supposed to be guarding her? And then also the fact that she spoke in those four languages. Asha Abdul Malaika, who's still alive and lives in Minneapolis area, Minnesota, she also used to sing in four languages. I'm going to include her song on here. And there was this one song where she said, "I don't need you." And she said it to them in Swahili, in English, in Arabic, and in Somali. I don't want to see you. Anna Mushaiza Shofa. Mimi Hapa Nasitaki. Kukuana Bewe. Mimi Hapa Nasitaki. Kukuana Bewe. And she was singing in the 70s and the 80s. And so I also say that to say that we've been doing this, you know, but it's really nice to see kind of the popularity that it's reached now, and the ways it's kind of spreading. And I think as time goes on and we have access to a lot more resources and kind of adapt into, you know, our host societies a lot more, we're going to continue to see a lot of great things. And so this episode, really, I just felt like, whoa, like, we out here, you know, like, we are fine. I never thought that I would see, I mean, not that I never, but I didn't expect anytime soon to see a Somali artist just do what Soldan Serrat did in London. So that is, like, amazing, and I would like to see, I personally would like to see Khalid Keo do something similar. I would like to see what that would look like if he was on a stage like that, or if he did a European tour or an American tour. He's another artist that I really enjoy watching, and so after this episode, I will finally drop the Khadar Keo Ragadamba episode. Yeah, thank you all for listening. So if there's anything else that you'd like to share, you know, you can feel free to always message me on the Instagram page _Isirka, and stay tuned for more. Kukala nakrono, milwana.